Chapter 26. One day, Harrow Hark's eye was caught by the rain drizzling outside on the docking terrace and by black figures rising in the fog. They were on the very edge of the terrace. She tugged her hood deep down over her head, walked outside into the rain. She kept bone chips clutched between her knuckles so that they would not grow wet from sweat or weather, and approached. One of the black figures resolved itself in that grey, stinking blanket of cloud, large and imposing, like the midday sun amid clouds. It was Coronabeth Tridentarius. She was turned away from Harrow, and her riot of hair, half caught in a fillet, half escaping, was soaking wet, a dark and crinkling amber in the rain. She was not fighting or arguing. She was still as a statue, and ready and waiting as a dog. The figure behind her was much smaller and slighter, the aseptic robes of his office a bleached blued grey with the water. The braid pinned high on his head was so pale as to be white, and his rain-sodden chainmail kirtle gleamed wetly amid the fog. At her creeping pace, Harrow Hark had covered only half the distance when she heard Silas Octokyzeron say, clear above the patter of falling drops,
"And somewhere out there, may all the blood of your blood suffer even a fraction of what I have suffered."
He pushed. The eldest princess of Ida dropped from the side of the docking bay with swan-like ease. She simply tipped off the side, neither folding nor seizing, there one moment a golden star, and then gone. There was no question of going to her aid. The eighth house necromancer stood there, with the wind flapping his wet alabaster robes, his braid torn to wisps and ribbons, and he did not even look over the side. But he did look to Harrow Hark.
"Defend yourself, Octokyzeron," she called out. "The Black Vestals have only one answer for murder."
"The Black Vestals only ever had one answer for anything," was the reply, in his profoundly deep, gorge-like voice.
He looked at her. From their distance of about five bodies apart, his eyes were umbrous in his white and stricken face.
"The question came, why? And the Black Vestals said, because. Now you have come to me, you cur of the nighttime, you fry of slavery. You have done what you have done, and you say to me, defend yourself. How could I?"
"I don't give a damn about white glass mysteries or cryptics," she said. "I care that you just pushed one of the Tridentari to her death."
"Death," said Silas.
He looked out again at all the rolling fog, at the clouds that obscured the grinding sea down to which Coronabeth was most likely still falling. From closer up, Harrow saw that he was all in disarray. His clothes were smudged, and a few of his buttons were not done up. The rain and the fog had lashed him terribly. Harrow took her hands from her pockets and strewed her chips upon the ground. From each chip she felt a pop, pop, pop at the back of her brain from the thalagy expenditure. She unfurled a full appendicular skeleton, extending the bone in a hurry so that none of the cortex could mix with water. The dull gleam of their compact bone shone like marble in the wet. Silas Octokyzeron looked at her five full constructs with his lip curling.
"Her filthiness is on her feet," he murmured. "She has not remembered her end."
"For God's sake, raise your hands, Octokyzeron," she said, "or make me strike down an unarmed man."
And Silas said,
"Is this how it happens then?"
He turned away. She saw what he meant to do, and her skeletons skittered forward on the rain-slick concrete of the docking terrace. But it was for nothing. Silas Octokaiseron had launched himself fearlessly into space after the tumbling body of Coronabeth Tridentarius. He fluttered in the wind and rain briefly, like a dirty white bird, and disappeared. She pushed through her skeletal crowd to stand at the edge. They held her arms back for safety and stared down into the virginal and unbroken bank of salty, reeking fog. There was no sign of either adept. From far below, the ocean howled. Harrow thought she perceived a tatter of something penetrate the cloud. Her heart pounded rhythmically in her ears, and she thought she saw, absurdly, a sudden gush of watery blood, as though the fog itself had been knifed. But it was gone almost as soon as she had seen it.